got a great guest this afternoon. He's got more credentials than Peyton Manning. Tom Ridge, governor of Pennsylvania, House of Representatives for 6 or 7 years, and Homeland Security. What am I left out?
Billy, you covered pretty much quite a bit of my life already.
Penn State.
Law school, Penn State.
Okay. Well, most interesting thing today is a presidential race, but let's just hit the Apple, deal. I'm not sure I fully appreciate and understand. It's a legal question, of course, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very much a legal question, but it's also a security section. Actually, it's a intersection of technology, civil liberties, and security. I mean, that's where it's now clashing. And you say to yourself, given the innovative world in which we live in, technology-driven, do we want terrorists to be able to, or organized crime, or predators, or drug cartels to be able to communicate and not give law enforcement access to it? And that's really the big challenge. And so this clash between technology, civil liberties, and security is what the whole Apple FBI confrontation is all about.
Okay. Tell me, where should we go?
Well, I think...
What is the solution?
Well, I think technology is always going to move faster than the government. I mean, government moves at glacier-like speed if it moves at all, and sometimes it goes backwards. And so I think the only solution in my mind is for Mr. Cook and some of those other from the valley and in that space and government to sit down, reduce the level of rhetoric, quit throwing charges at one another, and see if there's a way they can work out a mutually satisfactory solution. Because if we're looking for Congress to do it, I don't think it's going to happen. So I think it'll have to be between the parties.
Should the president get them in there and say, get an answer to this, and I'm locking the door?
I'm all for that. I'm all for that. Matter of fact, I don't mind standing outside the door with you to make sure they at least try. Right now they're talking at each other and over each other, and then they'd be a lot better off.
And they've got the lawyers in there for sure.
Well, we know that. Cracking up those billable hours, maybe. Who knows?
That's right. Okay, so you didn't tell me we had a solution coming up, but you gave me a pretty good idea how to get one.
Well, I think it's interesting. The legal solution's going in different directions. I think they're going to have some courts are probably going to say you can't compel Apple to do it. Other courts are going to say you can compel Apple to do it, and we've seen that's happened. There's a New York case that says, no, you can't compel them. There's a California case that says, yes, you can compel them. By the time it gets to the Supreme Court, we're 4 or 5 years down the road. We haven't gotten access to it, and this is just the first. Actually, this is the first public, but there have been a lot of other law enforcement agencies trying to break into the code, trying to break into this encryption. So they better resolve it themselves, because the lawyers aren't going to do it and the courts aren't going to do it in a timely way.
All right. I'm going to hold off on the presidential. I'm going to make that the last thing we're going to talk about.
All right.
But let's talk about energy.
Good.
And you know, the first oil was found in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, we had a seismic shift and it all turned down your direction. I don't know what happened there.
Well, I'll tell you, it was 1859. I can remember that. And it was Titusville. And that's right there north of Pittsburgh.
Used to be in my old congressional district. Old Drake Well sitting right there with all the memorials. Absolutely know it well.
But you had a lot of production, shallow production, right, for years and years and all. Then it does shift.
Yeah,
Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana and all. Guess what? Now we're back again in Pennsylvania. And let me give you some figures you may or may not remember, but I've been in oil field a long, long time. And I got out of school in 51 as a geologist. And you could go year after year after year and get 14 billion cubic feet of gas a day out of the Gulf of Mexico, all of it moving to the metropolitan areas in the Northeast.
Right.
Okay. Now, guess what's coming out of the Gulf of Mexico?
No idea.
Three billion a day. Three. Mm. What's coming out of Pennsylvania? 17. So you have flip-flopped the major producing area for natural gas from the Gulf of Mexico to Pennsylvania.
I wish I'd have been governor when we'd have found the Marcellus Shale and the fracking would have. I was governor from 95 to 2001, but that's the golden goose, and I'd have figured out a way to lay a golden egg or two while I was in Pennsylvania, that's for sure.
But tell me what golden eggs you had.
Well, I think when you have this resource available to you. There's so many positive things that could happen. I think one of the things that I regret or was in a position to do, I'd try to take a community or two and turn them really into a natural gas community. There's so many benefits. The emissions are lower, the cost of running your vehicles are lower, air quality improvement. You could probably attract an extension of a petrochemical company or two because of the byproduct. And there's so much going on with natural gas.
Yeah, the petrochemical industry, you know, they have to have the natural gas, but it's so cheap.
Exactly. Well, you know, and frankly, years ago, even when the price was higher than it is now, I guess it's $1.70 or something like that, but the president of U.S. Steel said he is now more competitive internationally simply because of the cost of production in the manufacturing space had dropped precipitously. So the tangible benefits from low natural gas prices are rather substantial.
Okay. Cheap energy will trump cheap labor.
Well, and cheap energy is what we have.
We'll get to presidential election later. Almost got into politics. Yeah. But it will. Yeah. And we have energy for 150 years. Natural gas. You can count on it. Count on it. This geologist, though. I may not be around to prove that.
I know you're going to try, but I mean, I'll take your word for it. And the bottom line is that you and I both know, and you probably know better than I because it's your world, but it's a huge natural security plus up for us. One, we are no longer dependent on any of these unpredictable sources. Number two, people don't forget, but you probably remember when before Marcellus and before fracking, Iran and Russia were talking about having their own little OPEC just to deal with natural gas and play around in that space. Well, we're no longer relying on any part of the world. And so number one, that ought to make us a lot more secure. But now we have the ability and the wherewithal to take this natural gas and use it as a tool to support our allies who are much more dependent on these unpredictable sources.
But why doesn't the President of the United States understand energy better than he does and that he says we don't need OPEC oil? Why didn't somebody say that?
Well, I don't know why he says that. I think he's just generally opposed to an expansion of any kind of fossil fuel whatsoever, okay. Even if it means lower emissions, lower heating costs, lower consumer cost, a lot easier for manufacturers to compete. I mean, the benefits are right in your face, and I think he's ignored the reality to the detriment of not the industry, but the detriment of the families and the companies that would take that industry and explode that sector out, and it would drive. Can you imagine what if he had taken part of that $1 trillion stimulus package, whatever it was actually throwing money down the hole way back when and directed some of that to support the natural gas industry. And they weren't looking for a lot of support. They'd rather probably just have some regulatory relief and go. Get us out of the way.
We don't need any tax support.
Just get out of the way.
They're not asking for money. No, they're not. But you know who our guy is that didn't say that. He would have had to maybe stuck his neck out a little bit. But George W.
Natural gas. If he had
a little more confidence, he could have been the one that announced that we have more energy than any place else in the world.
Well, I'm an all-in guy. I think there's reasons for us to explore ways to save energy from. I mean. Ultimately, the wind stops blowing and the sun stops shining. So if you're going to generate some power of that, you got to figure out a way to save it, but we haven't figured that yet. I'm a nuclear guy. I'm a natural gas guy. And you're in Pennsylvania, you better be a coal guy. I want all in. But right now, the fuel that would drive the economy is natural gas. And it's not a bridge fuel. It's here for a long, long time.
The fuel is so much cleaner. It's a higher end of the chain of fuels and all. It's the best hydrocarbon. And we don't use it. Yeah. We don't use it, and it's interesting. Okay, now I want to move on to the security, your Homeland Security guy.
Right.
So you have all answers there too. I've never interviewed anybody that had all answers
You're
subjects.
Still looking for that person when we're done with this interview, Boone.
You know, in '73 we had the Arab embargo,
right?
And it scared the hell out of everybody here. And at that point. You remember we peaked on production in the United States in 1970, 10 million barrels a day. Then we started to decline. Arab embargo comes and, oh my God, you know, that America is always going to be dependent on Mideast oil. So what do? Move the Fifth Fleet in there at 75, something like that. But we're moving along to be sure that we have access to Mideast oil. And lo and behold, we don't even need it. We do not need any Mideast oil today.
Exactly
right. Yeah, which is a great place for us to be. Well, security for America is, to me, is North America. On energy security, it's North America. You have Canada, Mexico, and the United States, and you can...
Don't need anybody else.
No, that's
exactly
it.
Right.
You've got it. But isn't that... That is a great place to be. And it's attached to us. We don't have to move across any water to get it or anything else. And but Homeland Security, that should relax the security issue.
Well, I think two things. One, we know, first of all, to your basic premise, that we can be forever independent of all these unpredictable and unreliable sources, free of the cartel, free of threats, just with what we have in North America. We're primarily here, but we got a lot of capability and friends in Canada and even in Mexico. So we know that's self-contained. Energy is a security issue. One of the reasons I suspect that we're going to continue to be in that part of the world for security purposes is that the world is still heavily dependent on fossil fuel from that area. And you know better than I do, than most, that the world still is driven, international economy is driven by fossil fuel. I'll
give you the number quick. Right. 95 million barrels a day produced in the world.
Right.
70% of transportation fuel.
Yep.
And I get on with these people. Listen, I'm a wind guy. I lost $150 million in that business. So doesn't that qualify me?
And with a smile on your face.
Yeah. I'll get it back.
Yeah.
But but wind and solar are not transportation.
They're not reliable.
No, there are only two fuels that move that 18-wheeler. Diesel or natural gas.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely.
Okay, you ready to go to politics?
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
Okay.
You want to talk about presidential race?
If I had died 5 years ago and gone to heaven, which I certainly expect to do, and you had died this week and you had come to heaven, I would immediately want to know, Tom, bring me up to date, what's happened on politics in the old world. And if you told me, I would wonder how this liar got into to heaven, because I would not have believed anything you told me. If you said this happened after you left, I wouldn't have believed it.
We're both hanging around in heaven. I tell you, we got a hell of a battle going on in the Republican primary, and the most unlikely candidate ahead of everybody else. I mean, I recognize that Donald Trump is the leading figure in this race. I am not one of those people that supports his candidacy. Actually, I'm quite fearful of it because I don't think the man reflects historic values of the Republican Party. I think he's dissed too many people. I think he's a divider. I don't think he's a uniter. He's good at marketing himself, but 45% tariffs on goods in the country, walls that Mexicans are going to build, these are not serious answers to serious problems. So, and yet he's such a good job of marketing himself right now as we're a couple weeks before we see who has, whether anybody can get enough delegates, he's in the lead. And unfortunately, I'm hopeful that my friend John Kasich, I was a Jeb Bush supporter before, love Jeb.
I was too.
He left the race with the same kind of dignity and class associated with his father and his brother. And
the Bushes are alike. I mean, you can count on patriotic, wonderful people.
Amen. And my friend John Kasich, actually I saw him the morning of the South Carolina debate. I was working out in the gym. He came in. We talked. We go back to our time together as young congressmen in 1982. And I said, you know, you're on my ticket, John. He knew he was second on my ticket because I'm also a pragmatist. I like both of those men because they're empathetic leaders. They don't talk and whine about problems. They try to solve them. They're both aspirational in their message. They're America's great, we'll make it greater. But also a practical side of me, Boone, I like having Florida and Ohio in my back pocket going into November.
Yeah, all right, now, where are we? We've got Rubio running 20 points behind Trump in Florida.
Well, you know, it depends on how this race narrows over the next couple of weeks. If we get the race narrowed down to Trump, Cruz, and Governor Kasich, I think he's got an excellent chance of winning the nomination.
This thing, it comes fast and moves faster and is over with quicker. You know, I mean, we're at the point now we're going to know who the nominee is.
Yeah, I think we'll have, I think by the end of March, there'll be about 65% of the delegates selected. I mean, I must tell you, I'm a little disappointed. I think this presidential race on the Republican side of the aisle has been driven more by polls and media than any race we've ever run across.
But what does the media try to do in every presidential election? Pick the winner. Yeah. Pick the candidate, first candidate. And then see if that candidate is the winner.
Well,
it's hard to play against them. But every one of these guys in this Republican debate have complained about that.
Well, I think of all the candidates out there on our side of the aisle, the candidate that has generated by a factor of 5x or 10x more free publicity on television is Donald Trump. And there used to be an equal time regulation in the middle of a campaign. Maybe it's after the primary election, but it's gone out the window. I mean, he's got his own national station. He's got his own network with Fox. He's on Fox all the time.
And he hasn't spent any money.
Well, not bad.
No, he's been pretty
cheap. Those outcomes.
And he told you that he was not going to spend a lot of money to do it.
He was pretty clear.
Now, he gets a general election, maybe things change. But has he changed the Republican Party, or do we know yet what he's done to the party, if anything?
Well, I think that's really an important question. There's enough of us think he is fundamentally changing it in a way that is not in our long-term best interest. Historically, we've tried to be a party of inclusion. He seems to exclude a lot of people with his commentary. Historically, we've offered good solutions to economic problems, and we've stood for a strong defense. But if you listen to him carefully, he hasn't had a serious idea come across his lips on this long litany of issues that the next president has to face. So I think I don't think he's advanced the interests of the party. Frankly, I read somewhere that he's changed his registration 4 times over the past 16 years. So I don't know whether he's Republican or Democrat. He's certainly not a conservative, but he's very much a Trumpster. I mean, he did a pretty good job of promoting himself, but not a point of view.
Now, do we have a different party because of him?
Well, it could be. I mean, right now, he initially said some time ago, well, I wouldn't run as independent. And I use this word lightly. Lately, he's been whining about being treated unfairly, and I just don't care for people that whine, particularly somebody that's getting all the favorable treatment that he's received. So if he runs as a third party, that's going to complicate the national election. I hope he stays true to his initial word. I mean, if he's true to his word and he said on national TV, I will not run as an independent candidate.
Unless I'm treated unfairly. Yeah. He said that. All right, now, you got to tell me about your book.
Well, I've had a book out for quite some time called Test of Our Times. My goal wasn't to make money, and I didn't, but I really wanted a chronicle.
Did you get it?
I wanted to put down, for historical reasons, purposes, some of the challenges we had when we put up the Department of Homeland Security. But I also wanted to chronicle some of the great Americans who left the Department of Defense, who left their private sector jobs, who came in to help me build my team as we put together 20-plus agencies and 180,000 people. My mission was accomplished in that regard. It was really to leave some kind of the first historical record of the creation of that department. I'm very satisfied with the outcome.
So it's
a good
book,
read.
Your book, you like it.
Yes, sir, why not? Absolutely.
Sure, of course.
It's like the Trumpster. If I can't promote myself, who can I promote?
That's right.
It's a good read.
Well, I bet it is, and I have a problem. I have macular eyes problem, and I read so slow now that I'm getting ready to switch over and listen to books.
I refer to it, Boone, as probably one of the best non-bestsellers in the history of the New York Times Book Review. But if it ever got to that point, I would love to have done an audio narrative, but it served my purposes. I wanted to chronicle what happened, and I did. With the people I worked with, and I did.
Well, Tom, it has been a very pleasant interview with you, but we've known each other for years. We're both Republicans and have fought a lot of the battles in the trenches together. Mm-hmm. This is going to have, I don't know, I'm not going to say unbelievable outcome, but up to this point, it's been somewhat unbelievable.
Well, it's unprecedented.
It is
really unprecedented to see somebody, look, I just don't see this man as my president. I don't see him as my commander-in-chief. Character, integrity, temperament, you go down the line. But what he's tapped into, I think, and I do recognize this, dissatisfaction with the government per se, absence of trust with historic institutions. But being angry is not a really a constructive emotion. So these are the problems. Okay, you kind of tapped into it, but how are we going to solve them? And you need somebody, I think, with an entirely different background and mindset into the problem-solving business. So he may prevail, he may not, but it's unprecedented and it's a good spectator sport right now.
It's our equivalent. Football season's over.
Well, it's like the WWF. We had 17 candidates. We had bodies flying all over the place.
Yeah. Tom, thanks.
Well, my great pleasure.
Good.
Thank you, sir.